My name is Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. Take two. My name is Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. That's right. You've reached All Things Reconsidered. And this is the show tonight. We're going to do this one live tonight. We have a number of things going on tonight. The recent hurricane developments have been incredibly, incredibly damaging to the president. And we've got a number of sound bites to hit you with this evening. So if you have a recorder, get it out. Now's the time. Another thing, too, is that we're going to do some commentary, read you some things. Tonight is going to be a little bit different show than we've had usually. But I do encourage you to sit back and relax and enjoy it. Following this show tonight, there will be no Peter Werby, so we're going to run as long as we can stand it. This is All Things Reconsidered. Again, welcome to All Things Reconsidered for this Sunday evening, September the 4th. My name is Bruce Birch, and I will be your host for the evening. I've got a number of things that I wanted to bring to your attention. One of the things that I've been watching, every one of us, I suspect, has been watching with, might I say, a little bit of morbid curiosity at the goings-on and the lack of attention paid to the folks down in New Orleans and the surrounding area. And tonight, you know, I wanted to kind of chronicle this tragedy, complete and utter tragedy, for your listening. Perhaps not enjoyment, but at least for your recordings down the road. And just so you know, my vernacular is out of the South, so hope you enjoy that as well. The first clip that I wanted to run tonight is an interview that was done with Ray Nagin, who is the mayor of now a city that is nearly completely destroyed. This interview is actually the day after 8 hours of Hurricane Katrina ravaged the city completely. So we're going to go ahead and run this clip. This was from WWL, which is a TV station down in New Orleans. And here is that clip.
Welcome back. Mike Haas, along with Dennis Waltering. We are now joined by the mayor of New Orleans, Ray Nagin. We want to get right to him because he's had a briefing of note, and we've been talking to you all day. Bring us up to speed with news that is not necessarily very good.
Well, you know, my heart is heavy tonight. I don't have any good news to really share other than at some point in time the federal government will be coming in here in mass. But, you know, the city of New Orleans is in a state of devastation. We probably have 80% of our city underwater, with some sections of our city The water is as deep as 20 feet. We still have many of our residents on roofs still waiting to be repaired. We have firemen, policemen, just about everybody that you can think of out there trying to rescue individuals from their roofs. We have an incredible amount of water in the city. Both airports are underwater. We have the twin spans in New Orleans East have been totally destroyed.
Wow.
They're gone. We have three huge boats that have been run aground. We have an oil tanker that is also run aground that is leaking oil. We have a serious levee break at the 17th Street Canal, where the 17th Street Canal is a place where both Orleans and Jefferson Parish both drain their cities. And there's a serious leak, and it's causing waters to continue to rise in certain sections of the city. We have houses that have been literally picked up off of their foundations and moved. The yacht club on the lake has burned and has burned totally and is destroyed. And I must tell people that are driving around, if you drive on a high rise, we're not sure of the structural soundness of the high rise because it appears as though a barge has hit one of the main structures of the high rise. This is a briefing that I got from a gentleman named Marty who's with FEMA. He's the under director of FEMA, and the FEMA secretary is coming in town tomorrow along with our senators and congressional leaders to do a flyover. All of Slidell, I understand, is underwater. Most of Metairie is underwater. And the list goes on and on. We have gas leaks that have sprouted up throughout the city, and even when they're underwater, they have you will see water and a flame shooting out of the water. It's pretty much, not a pretty picture. On the somewhat good news side, we still have lots of people that have survived this, that stayed here. The uptown areas seem to be pretty dry. The French Quarter and the CBD are relatively dry. But we also have buildings that you will have, they look like a bazooka was shot through them. There really is no clear path in and out of the city, whether you're going to the east or whether you're going to the west. The I-10 West Pontchartrain Expressway is still full of water, and we're trying to figure out a way to deal with that. We do have the National Guard who's here, and they're working with us, and they're trying to provide us with supplies and resources, and we put together a list from FEMA that basically is our wish list of things that we want, and we're going to continue to work. I wish I had some better news, but to the citizens that are out there around the country, and you're worried about New Orleans, and you're worried about trying to come back here, it's not the time for you to come back. There's basically no water in the city, and I shouldn't say no water. The water system has been pretty much contaminated, with the exception of the CBD area, as well as Algiers is on separate issues. There's no electricity. I'm sure Entergy has already reported. They expect electricity to be out for 4 to 6 weeks at a minimum, and the list goes on and on. So that's pretty much my report. We just need to start the process of rebuilding this city. We have a full commitment from the federal government, from the president on up, that they're going to bring whatever resources down here to see if we can get this this city rebuilt.
You mentioned earlier that what you're doing right now is rescuing people.
Yes.
Any sense of any idea of what the human toll is from this hurricane?
We really don't have a sense for how many lives have been lost, other than from the standpoint that we're concentrating on the living. But we have been getting many, many reports that of bodies floating in the water, and people obviously have been trapped inside their homes. So we're going to have a significant amount of loss of life in the city.
And where are those reports coming from?
everyone, the firemen, the policemen, the National Guard.
I mean, geographically in the city?
From everywhere. Mostly in New Orleans East and in the lower Ninth Ward is the primary areas where we get most of those support reports. But even in Mid-City and Gentilly, there are significant amounts of water just about everywhere, where a lot of the pictures, all you see is the roofs of the buildings.
Yeah, here's some of the, this is some of the rescue efforts. This is, I mean, they've been going on, you know, as soon as you guys could get out there, the rescue efforts began, and it's
well, as soon as the winds got down below 50 miles an hour, we sent our troops out. We had boats on standby. You know, thank God, you know, God was working with us, because we already had these boats pre-staged, so we were able to kind of get them out there. We also have Wildlife and Fisheries that is sending down another, I think, 43 boats, if I'm not mistaken. We will probably have 60 boats in the water between now and tomorrow morning. So we're really working hard, and we're saving children, we're saving elderly people. Some of our police officers and firemen would not wait for the boats. They could hear people screaming out to them, and they dove in the water and risked their lives to try and save some people.
I talked to a firefighter, actually, who said that they were hearing people screaming from the attics. And I understand a lot of the firefighters and maybe policemen as well are using their own boats.
They are. We're commandeering boats as much as we can. They have the power to do that. They tell me right now that they're still hearing people crying out for help. People are using guns to shoot in the air to be identified. They're using flares, and it's really kind of a surreal kind of situation. It's almost like a nightmare that I hope we wake up from.
This nightmare began last night, not far from certainly where you and we were all staying last night, the Hyatt Hotel. You know, the aerial pictures, I don't know if you've had a chance to see any of them. This, as you fly over, have you seen any of this?
I've seen some still shots, but I haven't seen any aerial video.
Well, obviously, the eastern side, I mean, that is the eastern side of that building.
I've seen that. The devastation is pretty amazing, but it's really kind of scattershot in a way, because you'll go from the Hyatt building and then you'll go on Canal Street and everything looks pretty good. Then you go in the French Quarter and things look relatively good. And then you go drive a few blocks away in the Treme area and you see just devastation and you see water. And then don't try and go east. It's just unbelievable.
Mayor, earlier you were talking about three pumps were still out. That was around, I guess, 2 or 3 o'clock this afternoon. What's the situation on that? And that was in the Ninth Ward?
It's in the Ninth Ward primarily, and also there's Pump Station 7 on Marconi Drive. It's my understanding they've identified the problems, and the Sewage and Water Board is in the process of fixing those problems. So we should have those pumps back online. But the real crux of the issue is the 17th Street Canal. Basically, the powerful waters that came up blew a hole in the levee, a block, almost two blocks long, and this is a concrete levee.
We're talking right there at Old Hammond Highway?
Yes, sir.
Where they put sandbags in. They were actually flood-proofing the bridge, if I'm not mistaken, in the process of it. That's what you're talking about?
Yes. The water just absolutely overwhelmed that levee system. As in the Florida, in the Ninth Ward, the Industrial Canal, obviously the waters from the lakes overwhelmed our levee systems, and that's when we had the breaches. And the 17th Street Canal right now is still flowing with water into the city and into Metairie, because there's so much water pushing from Metairie and so much water pushing from the city of New Orleans that it has to be relieved. And what's happening is that we are working against ourselves, because that water is coming in, we're pumping it back out, it's going back in the 17th Street Canal, and it's just a circular function.
So we're not able to get rid of this water in that area, and in the Ninth Ward, is that still a problem, getting rid of the water?
Yeah, the Ninth Ward is still a huge problem. And we were listening on a conference call. I was listening on a conference call earlier today with the governor and some representatives from St. Bernard. And St. Bernard sounds like it's even in worse shape. They said it was total This is Nita Huddleston was on the call, and she said there was total devastation in St. Bernard.
That's what we had heard. The Associated Press was reporting 40,000 homes flooded in St. Bernard alone. And I don't know how many homes they have in the parish, but I bet that's a significant number.
I can believe it. But we're saying, you know, the FEMA guy here is saying that 80% of the city of New Orleans is underwater, and a significant portion of Metairie and Kenner is just everything north of I-10 is definitely underwater.
And that was the first interview that the mayor of New Orleans, Ray Nagin, gave following landfall of Hurricane Katrina, which pretty much wiped out a great section down there of the Gulf Coast. The storm itself developed from a tropical wave about 175 miles east of Nassau, Bahamas. It strengthened into a Category 1 hurricane before making landfall on the Miami-Dade-Broward County line. It moved across Florida and then entered into the Gulf of Mexico, where it underwent a rapid intensification, reaching a Category 5 hurricane on August the 28th. It stayed there at Category 5 for the entire day, with winds getting close to 160 miles an hour with higher gusts. It made its second landfall near Grand Isle, Louisiana, with 140 mile-per-hour winds, or Category 4, on August the 29th, 2005, on Monday morning. Its eye wall then passed over the eastern edge of New Orleans before the hurricane was again over open water. It made a third landfall near the Louisiana-Mississippi border with 125 mile-per-hour winds, or about a Category 3. It weakened from this point forward, losing hurricane status over 100 miles inland near Laurel, Mississippi. It was downgraded to a tropical depression near Clarksville, Tennessee, as it continued to race northward. New Orleans, at the time of landfall, was under a mandatory evacuation order, but many residents remained in the city. It is debatable at this point, at least debatable for some folks, whether or not they had the opportunity to leave or not. Many of the federal FEMA people, as a matter of fact, the head of FEMA, Michael Brown, had the audacity to say at one point this weekend that they chose to remain behind. Something to keep in mind is that this city is predominantly African-American, and probably a third of the city is living at or below the poverty level. Additionally, as was demonstrated in today's New York Times, if you get a chance to take a look, it demonstrated that about 50% of those living at or below the poverty line in New Orleans had no cars. They were not able to leave. There were no buses leaving. There were no trains leaving. There were no planes leaving. There was no way for these people to leave New Orleans. Having said that, you know, there still were those that were would choose to blame the victims for this complete tragedy. It's my understanding that George Bush had not even heard that interview until sometime Tuesday evening, possibly even Wednesday morning. The federal response to this storm was atrocious at best. Some of there was a disaster relief request, which I will read you part of, that was actually written prior to landfall. Matter of fact, it was written last weekend, August the 28th, which would have been last Sunday, a week ago, that was written by the governor of Louisiana, that basically required or requested to the regional director, FEMA Region 6, Denton, Texas, that a federal declaration of disaster be made for a number of parishes within Louisiana. I could read you the entire letter, but there's a lot of stuff in there that's just legalese. I'm going to go ahead and play you another clip now. This is an interesting clip. For those of you who were around Friday, there was a telethon that was on NBC, I believe it was. And on that telethon, there was a certain African-American artist who decided to speak his mind about this disaster. And in a world today of very little truth-telling, he decided that he wanted to give some truth to the situation. So let's listen to this clip.
The city has changed dramatically, tragically, and perhaps irreversibly. There's now over 25 feet of water where there was once city streets and thriving neighborhoods.
I hate the way they portray us in the media. If you see a black family, it says they're looting. See a white family, it says they're looking for food. And you know it's been 5 days because most of the people are black. And even for me to complain about, I would be a hypocrite because I've tried to turn away from the TV because it's too hard to watch. I've even been shopping before even giving a donation. So now I'm calling my business manager right now to see what is the biggest amount I can give. And just to imagine if I was down there, and those are my people down there. So anybody out there that wants to do anything that we can help with the setup, the way America is set up to help the poor, the black people, the less well off, as slow as possible. I mean, this is Red Cross is doing everything they can. We already realize a lot of the people that could help are at war right now, fighting another way, and they've given them permission to go down and shoot us.
And subtle, but in even many ways more profoundly devastating, is the lasting damage to the survivors' will to rebuild and remain in the area. The destruction of the spirit of the people of southern Louisiana and Mississippi may end up being the most tragic loss of all.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
That was an interesting way to put that, Mr. West. George Bush doesn't care about black people. That was a very interesting way to put that. George Bush doesn't care about black people. Let's talk a minute about those, again, who were able to get out and those who weren't. Those who were able to get out of New Orleans, as has been documented by every single television station known to man, had the financial means to either, number one, fuel up their car and get the hell out of town, number two, fuel up their car and get the hell out of town, or number three, fuel up their car and get the hell out of town. Those who were left behind were left to a fate possibly worse than death itself. And those who were left behind had such little resources available to them to begin with. There was no way for them to get out of town. All they were able to do was just sit back and wait. And then once the storm came and passed, and the levees and the canal breached the city, and the water began to fill up some of the poorest areas, again, they were left with nowhere to go that was of any that had any safety. Hospitals that were open were taking those that were infirm. You know, the news media made a huge deal out of the looting that was going on, the so-called looting. You know, it was a horror story that came to life. A horror story. A complete horror story that came to life. It seems as if God had decided that love and caring wasn't colorblind. And I don't believe that. I do think, though, that the leaders of this country believe that. The reason why I do say that is because on the 29th, when the hurricane rolled through, it was there and gone, and, you know, Mayor Nagin, as he said in his interview, sent people out on the street as soon as the winds were down to 50 miles an hour to go and search out these victims. And by the next morning, on the 29th, in a TV interview, he was talking about the victims that were you know, in their houses, up in their attics, and unable to get out, and seeing them, you know. And it's just, it's shocking. And I guess I'm starting to get a little emotional here again, but being someone who is not a stranger to hurricanes, I can understand what they went through. However, I don't understand the complete lack of response that was given by the government. I'm going to go ahead and play another clip here real quickly. This clip is an exchange, and I really dislike giving any sort of props to Fox. Okay, I really dislike giving any props to Fox because Fox News is pretty much the armpit of the planet, besides the other anatomical regions that are in Washington. But in this particular interview, this particular exchange between Shepard Smith, Geraldo Rivera, and Sean Insanity and Alan Combs is very telling, to say the least. I have never, it's been a long time, at least, since I've seen someone act with a just complete and utter radicalization of their news interview. So this is that exchange.
And tonight, with their babies and their elderlies, and they need help that they're not getting. That's the fact in New Orleans tonight, Charlie.
Shep, how many people are you talking about on the bridge there? Because we see now, as we're on the air here this hour, the images of the convoys going in, the armed guards going in, and you see the supplies going in. Why are they not getting to that specific location?
I don't know.
Yeah, but we know for a fact that there's and how many people specifically are there?
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. See, the thing is, people don't know where to go now. They're not being told where to go. 2 days ago, I was on that same bridge at exit 235 saying there were thousands of people there then who didn't know where to go. They went to the Superdome. They were told no. The federal government finally stepped up and said, no, don't go to the Superdome. But they weren't told where to go. So they sit there. It may be because they were worried about chaos in other places if too many people were gathered. There's just no answer to that question. It's one of the first stories I've ever covered where questions as simple as, why do the people on the easily accessible bridge not get food and water and don't even get instructions of where to go to get food and water and medical attention? It's the first time I've ever not known the answer to that, and I'm not sure there is an answer.
Travis,
there may be
Allen,
nowhere for them to go yet.
Where do you go to get those answers? Who's in charge? Who do you ask? Where do you go to get information?
I don't know, Sean. There's a command center here, and I guarantee you they're doing their dead level best with what they have to work with. There are lots and lots of rescue workers in town. There's lots of food, but there are lots of people who are not getting it. And why is that? I wish I knew, Alan and Sean. I don't know.
Are volunteers needed? Is anything people can do to help? Do more people needed
well,
there to help distribute?
If there are hundreds of people on bridges and on freeways who are living outside with tiny babies who aren't getting formula and elderly people who need medicine, yes, they are needed. How can you help? I think the answer is to send money to relief organizations. But I don't want to sound crazy about this tonight. But Alan and Sean, we've seen this and we can smell it, and it's I don't know.
All right, Shep Smith in New Orleans tonight. Thanks, Shep. And joining us now from outside the convention center in New Orleans is our very own Geraldo Rivera, who's on the ground from earlier today. Geraldo.
Sean, I can't emphasize what Shep just said enough. He said it exactly right. There is no earthly answer that anyone can understand why these people, after 6 days, are still in this filthy, miserable convention center. Why are they still here? There's the freeway here. I tell you what I would have done. I would say, let them walk out of here. Let them walk away from the filth. Let them walk away from the devastation. Let them walk away from the dead bodies in here. They say they're on the second floor in the freezer. I've been on the first floor. It's like Willowbrook in there. I'm telling you, Sean and Alan, this is... You cannot deny that it's 6 days since this natural disaster befell New Orleans. What has happened since is as bad or worse than what Mother Nature did. It's just, I can't understand it. I've only been here in Louisiana for less than a day. I left New York yesterday. But coming to the convention center, it is as if time stopped. It's as if I'm back and it's Wednesday. I saw Fox News on Wednesday, and people were here at this building, the convention center, saying, get us out of here, help us, help us. And now it's 48 hours after that, and the people are still here. None of them, as far as I know, not a single one has been bussed out of here. They're all still here. Why is that? God, I wish I knew. I wish someone could tell me. Where are the buses? There are so many buses that could, where are the, you know, we had a flight, 159th Fighter Wing, Louisiana came down, and they were bringing in doctors and medical supplies and kicking off the MREs out of the helicopters, but none of the people are there. Look at this. Look at this little baby. There's so many little babies. Can I, here. How old is this baby?
He's 15 months.
15 months, okay. I got a baby. You know I have a baby. And you see, there are so many babies here. It's just not, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a question of objectivity. It's a question of reality. This is the, you can, how do you, I don't know, man. I don't, let them walk out of here. Let them walk the hell out of here. Let them get on that interstate and walk out, walk someplace, walk to the Walmart on the other side of the river, walk to some other town, walk someplace where you can help them. All you got here is thousands and thousands of people who have desperate, desperate needs 6 days later. These people in the same clothes. Where do you think they're going to the bathroom? They don't wash their hands. They don't wash their face. These babies. What the hell?
All right, Geraldo, hang on right there. Chef, we go back to Shepard. Smith is also in New Orleans. Shepard.
They won't let them walk out of there because I'm standing right above that convention center. And what they've done is they've locked them in there. The government said, you go here and you'll get help. Or you go in that Superdome and you'll get help. And they didn't get help. They got locked in there and they watched people being killed around them. And they watched people starving and they watched elderly people not get any medicine. And now they know it's happening because we've been telling them repeatedly over and over every day. And you know what they're doing now? And I'm not blaming anyone. I'm telling you what's happening. They have set up a checkpoint at the bottom of this bridge. This is the bridge that takes you from New Orleans over into Gretna, from Orleans Parish into Jefferson's Parish. It's the only way out. It's the connection to the rest of the world. And they've set up a checkpoint, and anyone who walks up out of that city now is turned around. You are not allowed to go to Gretna, Louisiana from New Orleans, Louisiana. Over there, there's hope. Over there, there's electricity. Over there, there's food and water. But you cannot go from there to
Chef,
there.
I think
the government will not allow you to do it. It's a fact.
I want to get some perspective here, because earlier today, the images
were... That is perspective.
Hang on a second.
That is all the perspective you need.
Hang on a second. I want to get perspective in this sense, that earlier today, Fox was showing the images of the convoys, of the people getting in there. With the convoys, there was food, there was medicine, there was water, and there were supplies. So obviously, we are getting a lot closer than we were. So what is it going to take? What is the time frame, is anybody saying, that we're going to get that was going in there today to the people that you're talking about?
No idea.
No idea. Okay. Because that's what needs to be done. Obviously, it's clear that there is an effort.
You hit the nail on the head. We've been saying that's what needs to be done every day. Everyone here knows that's what needs to be done. I'm sure every caring human being who is out here volunteering his time, or who wears a badge for a living because he loves his fellow man, or who goes out to fight fires because he loves his fellow man, wants people to get help, but they're not getting it.
All right, we'll go back to Geraldo. Geraldo, you there?
Sean, look. Sean, just take a look. Take a look. I want everyone in the world to see 6 days after Katrina swept through this city, 5 days after the levee collapsed, this baby, how old is this baby?
10 months old.
And where's your, and you're missing twins?
Yes, this is my youngest grandson, and this is their brothers. We got separated.
All right, they're separate. I hope to God, I'm so glad they're not here. They're not here. They're not here at hell on earth. But here, hold this, honey. What's your name?
My name is Anna Lee.
Okay. Look in the face of the baby. This is it. This is it. No sugarcoating, no political spin, no Republicans or Democrats. People suffering. Let them go. Let them out of here. Let them go. Let them walk over this damn interstate and let them out of here.
All right. Thanks, Geraldo. Appreciate it. We appreciate it. From New Orleans tonight. And we are now joined with an update from New Orleans.
And that was an exchange between Shepard Smith, Sean Hannity, Alan Combs, and Geraldo Rivera. I'm going to echo a similar sentiment that I just read. Frightening, completely frightening. I listened to that for the probably third or fourth time, and it still chokes me up to hear that our own citizens are blocking our own citizens, or we're blocking our own citizens from going to the mainland, from going to where they needed to go to get help. Completely, completely inexcusable on the part of our government to turn guns on our own people. These people who had just gone through perhaps the most incredible disaster that they had ever lived through in their lives, only to turn around to go to a shelter, to be brought to a shelter, thinking that they were going to be going there, you know, for safety, to get food, to get water, to be able to sleep, to be able to shower. And instead, they were taken into hell on earth. There's a sign that I read that was propped up on some chairs out in front of the New Orleans, Superdome, or it could have been the convention center, one of the two, where they had our citizens corralled, that said, "The Shelter from Hell." In some of the news that is coming out today, that indeed is exactly what happened there. According to Reuters, people left homeless have told horrific stories of rape, murder, and trigger-happy guards in two New Orleans centers that were set up as shelters but had become places of violence and terror. Police and National Guard troops on Saturday closed down the two centers, the Superdome Arena and the city's convention center, but then penned in the storm victims outside in sweltering heat to keep them from trying to walk out of the city. Military helicopters and buses staged a massive evacuation to take away thousands of people who waited in orderly lines in stifling heat outside of the flooded convention center. The refugees, or I should say our citizens, excuse me, who were waiting to be taken to sports stadiums and other shelters across Texas and Louisiana, described how the convention center and the Superdome became lawless hellholes beset by rape and murder. Several residents of the impromptu shantytown recounted two horrific incidents where those charged with keeping people safe had killed them instead. In one incident, a young man was run down and then shot by a New Orleans police officer, and in another, a man seeking help was gunned down by a National Guard soldier, witnesses said. Police refused to discuss or confirm either incident. National Guard spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Peter Schneider said that he had not heard of any information of a weapon being discharged. However, Steve Bonka, who is one of our citizens being penned in, said, "They killed a man here last night. A young lady was being raped and stabbed, and the sounds of her screaming got to this man, and so he ran out into the street to get help from troops to try to flag down a passing truck of them, and he jumped up on the truck's windscreen, and they shot him dead." Another tale of horror was recounted by Wade Batiste. "Last night at 8 a.m. or 8 p.m., they shot a kid of just 16. He was crossing the street. They ran him over, the New Orleans police did, and then they got out of the car and shot him in the head," Batiste said. "The young man's body lay in the street by the convention center's entrance on Saturday morning, covered by in a black blanket, a stream of congealed blood staining the street around him. Nearby, his family sat in shock. A member of that family, Africa Brumfield, confirmed the incident, but declined to be quoted about it, saying her family did not wish to discuss it. But she spoke of general conditions here, and this is what she said. She said, 'There are rapes going on here. Women cannot go to the bathroom without men. They are raping them and slitting their throats. They keep telling us the buses are coming, but they never leave.'" People here said that there were now 22 bodies of adults and children stored inside the building, but troops guarding the building refused to confirm that and threatened to beat reporters seeking access to the makeshift morgue. People trying to walk out are forced back at gunpoint, as was just talked about in that clip that we played. Something the troops said was for their own safety. It's sad, but how far do you think they would get? One soldier said. Another citizen, penned in by our government, said, "They have us living here by animals. We've had only two meals. We have no medicine, and now there are thousands of people defecating in the streets. This is wrong. This is the United States of America." One National Guard soldier, who asked not to be named for fear of punishment from his commanding officer, said that the lack of medical attention at the center, he said they, the Bush administration, care more about Iraq and Afghanistan than here. This particular Louisiana National Guard soldier said, "We are doing the best we can with the resources we have, but almost all of our guys are in Iraq." And this was well planned. I mean, you know, I don't think so. But apparently, according to, you know, those who were clapping each other on the back and saying great job on Wednesday, said great job, great job. You know, great job. You're really taking care of them down there. Now, you know, when I was watching that clip, when they're saying, you know, congratulating each other and clapping each other on the back, I began to wonder, okay, well now, who were they talking about? Were they talking about the ones that got out? Or were they talking about the people that they were starving to death? Or were they talking about the people that they had penned in? You know, and I'm going to leave you to make that decision. I'm going to play another clip here. And this particular clip is... This particular clip is Mr. Ray Nagin.
Me executive powers to authorize me to dictate and to manage military resources down here, and I'll fix this for you. You call him right now, and you call the governor, and you tell him to delegate the powers that they have to the mayor of New Orleans, and we'll get this damn thing fixed. It's politics, man, and they're playing games, and they're spinning. They're out there spinning for the cameras.
But can't they just... If nothing else, look at 25% of their energy coming from the state is not flowing through the pipelines. We're on the verge of anarchy. Can't they understand that they're, if nothing else, they're going to be hurt politically?
I don't know what they're doing. I mean, the air conditioning must be good because I haven't had any in 5 days. And maybe there's some smoke coming out of the air conditioning units that's clogging some folks, you know, their vision.
Have you talked with the president?
I've talked directly with the president.
What did he
say? Talked to the head of the Homeland Security. I've talked to everybody under the sun. I've been out there, man. I flew these helicopters, been in the crowds, talking to people, crying, don't know where their relatives are. I've done it all, man. And I tell you, man, Garland, I keep hearing that it's coming. This is coming, that is coming. And my answer to that today is BS. Where is the beef? Because there is no beef in this city. There's no beef anywhere in southeast Louisiana. And these goddamn ships that are coming, I don't see them.
What did you say to the President of the United States, and what did he say to you?
I basically told him we had an incredible crisis here, and that his flying over in Air Force One does not do it justice. And that I have been all around this city, and I am very frustrated because we are not able to marshal resources, and we're outmanned in just about every respect. You know the reason why the looters got out of control? Because we had most of our resources saving people, thousands of people, that were stuck in attics, man, old ladies. When you pull off the doggone ventilator vent, and you look down there, and they're standing in there in water up to their freaking neck. And they don't have a clue what's going on down here. They flew down here one time, 2 days after the doggone event was over, with TV cameras, AP reporters, all kind of goddamn, excuse my French, everybody in America. But I am pissed.
Did you say to the President of the United States, I need the military in here?
I said I need everything. Now, I will tell you this, and I give the President some credit on this. He sent one John Wayne dude down here that can get some stuff done, and his name is General Honore. And he came off the doggone chopper, and he started cussing, and people started moving. And he's getting some stuff done. They ought to give that guy, if they don't want to give it to me, give him full authority to get the job done, and we can save some people.
What do you need right now to get control of this situation?
I need reinforcements. I need troops, man. I need 500 buses, man. We're talking about, you know, one of the briefings we had, they were talking about getting, public school bus drivers to come down here and bus people out here. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. This is a national disaster. Get every doggone Greyhound bus line in the country and get their asses moving to New Orleans. That's they thinking small, man, and this is a major, major, major deal. And I can't emphasize it enough, man. This is crazy. I've got 15 to 20,000 people over at the convention center. It's bursting at the seams. The poor people in Plaquemines Parish, they're air-vacking people over here in New Orleans. We don't have anything, and we're sharing with our brothers in Plaquemines Parish. It's awful down here, man.
Do you believe that the president is seeing this, holding news conference on it, but can't do anything until Kathleen Blanco requests him to do it? And do you know whether or not she has made that request?
I have no idea what they're doing, but I will tell you this. You know, God is looking down on all this, and if they are not doing everything in their power to save people, they are going to pay the price. Because every day that we delay, people are dying. And they're dying by the hundreds, I'm willing to bet you. We're getting reports and calls that is breaking my heart from people saying, I've been in my attic. I can't take it anymore. The water is up to my neck. I don't think I can hold out. And that's happening as we speak. And you know what really upsets me, Garland? We told everybody the importance of the 17th Street Canal issue. We said, please, please take care of this. We don't care what you do. Figure it out.
Who'd you say that to?
Everybody. The governor. You know, Homeland Security, FEMA, you name it, we said it. And, you know, they allowed that pumping station next to it, Pumping Station 6, to go underwater. Our sewage and water board people, Marcia St. Martin, stayed there and endangered their lives. And what happened when that pumping station went down, the water started flowing again in the city. And it started getting to levels that probably killed more people. In addition to that, we had water flowing through the pipes in this city. That's a power station over there. So there's no water flowing anywhere on the east bank of Orleans Parish. So a critical water supply was destroyed because of lack of action.
Why couldn't they drop the 3,000-pound sandbags or the containers that they were talking about earlier? Was it an engineering feat that just couldn't be done?
They said it was some pulleys that they had to manufacture, but you know, in a state of emergency, man, you are creative. You figure out ways to get stuff done. Then they told me that they went overnight and they built 17 concrete structures, and they had the pulleys on them, and they were going to drop them. I flew over that thing yesterday, and it's in the same shape that it was after the storm hit. There is nothing happening. And they're feeding the public a line of bull, and it's spinning, and people are dying down here.
If some of the public called, and they're right, that there's a law that the president, that the federal government can't do anything without local or state request, would you request martial law?
I've already called for martial law in the city of New Orleans. We did that a few days ago.
Did the governor do that too?
I don't know. I don't think so. But we called for martial law when we realized that the looting was getting out of control, and we redirected all of our police officers back to patrolling the streets. They were dead tired from saving people, but they worked all night because we thought this thing was going to blow wide open last night. And so we redirected all of our resources, and we held it under check. I'm not sure if we can do that another night with the current resources. And I am telling you right now, they're showing all these reports of people looting and doing all that weird stuff, and they are doing that. But people are desperate, and they're trying to find food and water, the majority of them. Now, you got some knuckleheads out there, and they are taking advantage of this lawless, this situation where, you know, we can't really control it, and they are doing some awful, awful things. But that's a small majority of the people. Most people are looking to try and survive. And you've got one of the things people have, nobody's talked about this. Drugs flowed in and out of New Orleans and the surrounding metropolitan area so freely it was scary to me. And that's why we were having an escalation in murders. People don't want to talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it. You had drug addicts that are now walking around this city looking for a fix. And that's the reason why they were breaking in hospitals and drug stores. They're looking for something to take the edge off of their Jones, if you will. And right now, they don't have anything to take the edge off. And they probably found guns. So what you're seeing is drug-starving, crazy addicts, drug addicts, that are wreaking havoc. And we don't have the manpower to adequately deal with it. We can only target certain sections of the city and form a perimeter around them and hope to God that we're not overrun.
Well, you and I must be in the minority, because there, apparently there's a section of our citizenry out there that thinks because of a law that says the federal government can't come in unless requested by the proper people, that everything that's going on to this point has been done as good as it can possibly be.
Really?
I know you don't feel that way.
Well, did the tsunami victims request, you go through a formal process to request? You know, did the Iraqi people request that we go in there? Did they ask us to go in there? What is more important? This is, you know, and I'll tell you, man, I'm probably going to get in a whole bunch of trouble. I'm probably going to get in so much trouble it ain't even funny. They probably won't even want to deal with me after this interview is over.
Well, you and I'll be in the funny place together.
But we authorized $8 billion to go to Iraq, lickety-quick. After 9/11, we gave the president unprecedented powers, lickety-quick, to take care of New York and other places. Now, you mean to tell me that a place where most of your oil is coming through, a place that is so unique, when you mention New Orleans anywhere around the world, everybody's eyes light up. You mean to tell me that a place where you probably have thousands of people that have died and thousands more that are dying every day, that we can't figure out a way to authorize the resources that we need? Come on, man. You know, I'm not one of those drug addicts. I am thinking very clearly. And I don't know whose problem it is. I don't know whether it's the governor's problem. I don't know whether it's the president's problem. But somebody needs to get their ass on a plane and sit down, the two of them, and figure this out right now.
What can we do here?
Keep talking about it.
Okay. We'll do that. What else can we do?
Organize people to write letters, make calls to their congressmen, to the president, to the governor. Flood their doggone offices with requests to do something. This is ridiculous. I don't want to see anybody do any more goddamn press conferences. Put a moratorium on press conferences. Don't do another press conference until the resources are in this city. And then come down to this city and stand with us when there are military trucks and troops that we can't even count. Don't tell me 40,000 people are coming here. They're not here. It's too doggone late. Now get off your asses and let's do something, and let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
I'll say it right now. You're the only politician that's called for arms like this. And if whatever it takes, the governor, president, whatever law precedent it takes, whatever it takes, I bet that the people listening to you are on your side.
Well, I hope so, Garland. I am just, I'm at the point now where it don't matter. People are dying. They don't have homes. They don't have jobs. The city of New Orleans will never be the same. And it's time.
We're both pretty speechless here.
Yeah, I don't know what to say.
I gotta go.
Okay.
Keep in touch. Keep in touch.
It's hard to follow that clip with anything that's that even resembles commentary. I think that said it all. My voice has been shaky throughout this broadcast tonight, and I'm going to tell you, this is very powerful. To listen to these clips back to back and to understand that this is not in Iraq, this is not in Somalia, this is not halfway around the world, this is in the United States of America, this is in our backyard. These are our people, as are all the world. And I'm going to run the show a little bit long tonight because I think that this particular subject deserves a lot more than just an hour. So we're going to run until it runs out. I'm going to do another clip here because I think that following that interview, but there's a couple of things I want to comment about that particular interview. This was done he said he wasn't sure whether or not a disaster declaration had been signed, and apparently that was done prior to the hurricane's landfall. So basically, the governor of Louisiana had acquiesced control of the cleanup of the disaster response to the feds before the hurricane came inland. And I would like to, I think that's a very important thing to understand, is that this particular hurricane and this particular situation, the governor of Louisiana gave away to the president of the United States control of how to deal with this hurricane on the 28th of August. Apparently this letter was sent to Crawford, Texas. So, just to answer that question that they both had, that they didn't know. And this is the interesting thing, that if the mayor of New Orleans didn't even know that a letter had been sent to the president, basically giving away control of the situation to him and to FEMA and to the federal government, that if the mayor didn't even know, and this was on Thursday, if the mayor didn't even know, then, you know, obviously there was a huge breakdown in communication here. And perhaps, you know, who knows where that lack of communication came. But this mayor, and I'm going to speak a couple of minutes about him, this particular mayor went out there into the city and worked with some of the rescue workers and went into some of the shelters and saw the looks on these people's faces. This is a man who was raised in the Ninth Ward of New Orleans, Louisiana, one of the poorest areas in the city, who rose, you know, through his abilities and eventually became the mayor of New Orleans, very popular mayor. And to hear him talk about his city in that way is, you know, it's pretty harrowing. It's, you know, it's very powerful to me to hear that, and I'm sure it was to you as well. But I do want to say also what else that, you know, is especially you know, important about all of this is to keep some perspective, if possible. Let's just go ahead and do another clip, because that's probably the best way to keep this thing rolling. This next clip is coming up. Now, I played you the Nagin the Ray Nagin TV interview where he, this is the day after, where he was very calm and he was talking about, you know, some of the things that were going on, and they seemed to have a degree of calmness and that they had the situation under control. And then 3 days later, or 2 days later, he was a complete wreck. And, you know, and basically said, you know, that that they needed to get somebody down there, and they needed to get somebody down there now. Well, I'm gonna switch over to another politician who did a flyover. This is Mary Landrieu, who did a flyover of New Orleans, and you know, and in this flyover, she talks about some of the things that you know, some of the lack of response. So let's go ahead and run that clip.
Open the doors to these houses. I have no idea.
They're going to find people.
What they're going to find. No idea. People could be floating up under the roof holding their babies. They could have drowned holding babies. I don't know. But as a senator, I can promise you that happened at least once. I can promise you. Because, and I'm sure it's happened 10 times. I'm positive it's happened 10 times. Maybe it's happened 1,000 times. Look, this is New Orleans, George, out here. This whole city is underwater. This is the city of New Orleans. The main downtown area. That's the criminal court building. When people say, why can't you law enforcement? That's our prison. You see that prison right there? That is the prison that we had to evacuate 1,300 prisoners from, and the sheriffs swam through that water. Wait a minute. They circled this prison. They swam through the water with no equipment, handcuffed 1,300 prisoners, put them on that bridge, and lifted 1,300 prisoners out, not to save them, but to keep them from rioting and getting into the city. And the nation is criticizing us, saying, why are you evacuating your prisoners? We had no choice. It was a high priority item to do, because if we wouldn't have, they would have broken out of the jail, and we would have had the worst criminals in the city, more than just the thugs that were on the street, terrorizing people. That's the bridge. Our sheriff swam through this water with handcuffs in their teeth, went in, got the prisoners, orderly walked the prisoners out. Now, I dare any sheriff in America to be able to execute that, and our sheriffs did. And if one person criticizes them or says one more thing, including the President of the United States, he will hear from me. One more word about it after this show airs, and I might likely have to punch him, literally. No one, under any circumstance, could have ever, ever survived under these conditions. It's like hell. Look at this. You're going to see the break. And the break is going to be on the right-hand side of this canal. Okay, follow this canal. Follow with your eyes. Now, does that look like that's getting constructed anytime soon to you? That breach, there is one
crane.
Look at that. There is one crane for the whole breach. Is that pitiful? Now, the president came here yesterday for a photo op. He came here for the photo op. He got his photo op. But we are never going to get this fixed if he does not send us help now. Now, George.
The president said that this couldn't be anticipated, this kind of a breach.
The president could have funded it. He cut it out of the budget. Is that the most pitiful sight that you have ever seen in your life? Look at that. It's so sad, George. One little crane.
Senator Landrieu and I finished our conversation after we landed in Baton Rouge.
If you have one message today, is that this is not just about Louisiana. This is going to affect everyone.
It is not about Louisiana. It's not about Mississippi. It's about this whole region. It's about the country. It's about the world at this point, seriously. These assets are so valuable. These people are so wonderful. There is such suffering and devastation. It is mind-boggling to everyone in Louisiana, including myself, why the president did not send forces earlier.
Looking forward, what exactly needs to be done now? You asked the president yesterday for to have one person in charge of the overall recovery rebuilding effort.
Well, when I saw the president yesterday, I looked him directly in the eye. I said, Mr. President, we need all the assets you have, more military assets, every resource the federal government can give us. We need it now. We needed it days ago. And we've got to have someone in charge that reports directly to you, that takes responsibility for this stand-up.
You're talking cabinet level.
Cabinet level, stand-up, cabinet level, someone that has unlimited resources at this point.
Did you ever think you'd see something like this?
I never in my lifetime thought I would see it. But, George, I have thought about it and dreamed about it and nightmares about it, because we understand where we live. We know what we do for the nation, even though the nation doesn't fully appreciate what we do for them. People in Louisiana know we supply the seafood, we supply the oil, we supply their goods through our ports. We're proud of it. We are proud people, and we're good people. But their infrastructure, our infrastructure, is devastated. Their lives are in shatters. The region is torn to pieces. Would the president please stop taking photo ops and please come see what I'm trying to show him?
And we saw a lot today. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
One more note.
And something to keep of note there is that in some of the clips and some of the video that went on the television there, you know, they showed the president pointing out some things, and he went right to the crane as if there were some magic bunch of work going on, and, you know, all these workmen standing around, and in the flyover there was one crane working, and there was perhaps maybe two or three people standing beside the crane. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. You can reach the show, if you would like to reach the show. You can reach us at www.thetruthis.us/ATR. You can also reach us at ATR@MWBR.net. That's just to sort of identify what's going on and what you're listening to. This is All Things Reconsidered. That particular clip of Mary Landrieu, I mean, one might say, well, he's picking all the clips that have all the emotional reactions by people, and I got to tell you, I haven't seen one clip yet. Well, no, I take that back. I have seen a clip, and it was about the president speaking, who didn't show any emotion. So I do stand corrected of myself at this point. But everyone else that I've seen talk, even Michael Chertoff, expressed some emotion. It was anger, but it was an emotion nonetheless. And, you know, as we go through some of these clips, you know, we're finding that it's getting worse and worse. And, you know, this morning in the... that was part of this week with George Stephanopoulos from, I believe that's ABC. And we've already gotten into the Sunday morning programs. You know, it seems as if now, as we've gotten some of the survivors, a good, but you know, probably the majority of the survivors, out of New Orleans and on, you know, to places where they're going to be housed in various cities, such as Houston, Texas, San Antonio, Phoenix, Arizona, I've heard, even as far north as North Carolina. You know, that as we've fanned these folks out across the South and across the Southwest, you know, there's a troubling thing that remains. And that troubling thing is about, how did this happen? How did this tragedy happen? How did we get to this point? You know, the levees that were there, the levees, you know, there was the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that had been working on the levees for probably 37 years. And I think it was the last year or the year before last was the first time in 37 years that they had actually been, 67 years, not 37, that there had been constant work on the levees around New Orleans for that long. Now, you know, we heard earlier Ray Nagin talking about the pumps in Station 3 that was pumping water out of the 9th Ward out there into Lake Pontchartrain, which was then turning around and coming back into the city in the breach of the the dike there on the 17th Street Canal. Now, this particular pumping station failed. And that is primarily, according to, I mean, you know, everything that I've read, was probably the biggest reason why the city filled up, you know. I mean, beyond the fact that the levees broke, beyond the fact that everything else went to hell, this pumping station ended up underwater and the pumps failed. Now, there was money in the budget for these levees. There was money in the budget for water control down there in Louisiana, and the money was, unfortunately, diverted to Iraq and Afghanistan. So as a result, we may have the largest death toll in the United States due to a natural disaster such as this that we've ever had. It's already being called the most costly disaster that we've ever experienced. Our citizens who are penned in by more of our citizens at gunpoint deserve far better than that. We have many of our soldiers that probably came right out of some of the very same neighborhoods that are underwater in New Orleans, over in Iraq, defending, according to Mr. Bush, defending the United States, when they could be here helping out their brothers and their sisters and their fathers and their mothers and their uncles and their aunts and their grandparents. But no, they were diverted. They were sent away. And so the city was left to stand on its own. The city was left to stand, you know, amidst probably the worst natural disaster we've ever seen. There have been a lot of reports of gangs roving New Orleans at this point. I've seen a couple of posts, if you will, about people shooting at the contractors, and I got to say, you know, I really think that it's hard for me to believe a whole lot of that. You know, I know that they're out there, and I'm sure that there are some that are committing crimes and gangs that would just as soon see New Orleans stay underwater for a while so that they can do their thing. You know, but I can't help but think that the majority of those people are probably driven by desperation. It was very telling that when a white person was seen by a helicopter, cameraman, dragging some bread and some, you know, some food out of a store, the newscaster said, well, they found some food. Yay. Where if the black person was doing it, they were called, oh, those people are looting. They're looting. You know, this has truly become a terrible, terrible situation. But I'm going to go ahead and play another clip for you and we'll talk some more about the government's role in all of this. The next clip you're going to hear is Michael Chertoff from Meet the Press this morning.
Listen, hold on, Mr. Secretary. There was no food or water at the Superdome either. And I want to stay on this. I want to stay on this because this is very important. You said you were surprised by the levee being broken. In 2002, the Times-Picayune did story after story, and this is eerie. This is what they wrote and how they predicted what was going to happen. It said, and I'll read it very carefully, a major hurricane could decimate the region, but flooding from even a moderate storm could fill thousands in just a matter of time. The scene's been played out for years in computer models, emergency operations, simulations. New Orleans has hurricane levees that create a bowl with the bottom dripping lower than the bottom of Lake Pontchartrain. The levees would trap any water that gets inside by breach, overtopping, torrential downpour, catastrophic storm. The estimated 100,000 or more people left behind in evacuation will be struggling to survive. Some will be housed at the Superdome. the designated shelter for people too sick or infirm to leave the city. Many will simply be on their own in homes or looking for high ground. Thousands will drown while trapped in homes or cars by rising water. Others will be washed away or crushed by debris. Survivors will end up trapped on roofs and buildings, high ground surrounded by water, with no means of escape, little food, fresh water, perhaps for several days. That was 4 years ago. And last summer, FEMA, who reports to you, and the LSU Hurricane Center, and local and state officials, did a simulated Hurricane Pam, in which the levees broke. The levees broke, Mr. Secretary, and people, thousands drowned. There's a CD which is in your department, and the White House has it, and the President, and you are saying, we were surprised that the levees may not hold. How could this be?
No, Tim, I have to tell you, that's not what I said. You have to listen to what I said. What I said was, not that we didn't anticipate that there's a possibility these levees will break. What I said is, in this storm, what happened is, the storm passed, and passed without the levees breaking on Monday. Tuesday morning, I opened newspapers and saw headlines that said, New Orleans dodged the bullet. What surprised them was that the levee broke overnight and the next day, and in fact collapsed. That was a surprise. As to the larger point, there's no question that people have known for probably decades that New Orleans sits in a bowl surrounded by levees. This is a city built on the coast in an area that has hurricanes in it, that is built below sea levels, and that is a soup bowl. People have talked for years about, you know, whether it makes sense to have a city like that, how to build the levees. So, of course, that's not a surprise. What caught people by surprise in this instance was the fact that there was a second wave. And that, as the Times-Picayune article makes very clear, creates an almost apocalyptic challenge for rescuers. The fact of the matter is, there's only really one way to deal with that issue, and that is to get people out first. Once that bowl breaks and that soup bowl fills with water, it is unquestionably the case, as we saw vividly demonstrated, that it's going to be almost impossible to get people out. So there is really only one way to deal with it, and that is to evacuate people in advance. Michael Brown got on TV on Saturday, and he said to people in New Orleans, take this seriously. There is a storm coming. On Friday, there was discussion about the fact that even though the storm could fall anywhere along the Gulf, people had to be carefully monitoring it. We were watching it on Saturday and Sunday. The president was on a video conference on Sunday telling us we've got to do everything possible to be prepared. But you know, Tim, at the end of the day, this is the ground truth. The only way to avoid a catastrophic problem in that soup bowl is to have people leave before the hurricane hits. Those who got out are fine. Those who stayed in faced one of the most horrible experiences in their life.
But that's the point. Those who got out were people with SUVs and automobiles and airfares who could get out. Those who could not get out were the poor, who rely on public buses to get out. Your website says that your department assumes primary responsibility for a national disaster. If you knew a Hurricane 3 storm was coming, why weren't buses, trains, planes, cruise ships, trucks provided on Friday, Saturday, Sunday to evacuate people before the storm?
Tim, the way that Emergency Operations Act under the law is, the responsibility and the power, the authority to order an evacuation rests with state and local officials. The federal government comes in and supports those officials. That's why Mike Brown got on TV on Saturday and he told people to start to get out of there. Now, ultimately, the resources that will get people who don't have cars and don't have the ability to remove themselves has to rest with the kinds of assets the city has, the city's buses, the city's transportation. You know, there will be plenty of time to go back over what the preparation has been with respect to infrastructure in New Orleans, with respect to transportation, with respect to evacuation, to confront a situation that, as you point out, people have been aware of for decades. This is not something that just came on the horizon recently. But I want to leave you with a very, very important marker, which I'm going to put down now. At this particular moment, this is not over. There is a tremendous challenge. Whatever the criticisms in the after-action report may be about what was right and what was wrong looking back,
What would be a horrible tragedy would be to distract ourselves from avoiding further problems because we're spending time talking about problems that have already occurred. We are going to have to feed, wait a second, we're going to have to feed, clothe, house, and educate a city of people scattered across the country. We're going to have to do it in a way that doesn't disrupt the rest of the country. We're going to have to continue the work to restore our infrastructure. We're going to have to clean probably the greatest environmental mess we've ever seen in this country. And we're going to have to make important decisions about this in the next days and weeks and months. And I've got to tell you that for my money, what I'm going to spend my time on is focusing on making sure we are getting on top of emergencies that are still underway.
This is hurricane season. Are you prepared for another hurricane in that region, or God forbid, a nuclear or biological attack, which we're told could happen at any time?
I'm going to tell you, Tim, you've put your finger on something which I said the day after this hurricane hit. As catastrophic as this is, we are still in hurricane season. And as much as we are working on desperately getting people out now, we've got to make sure we are holding in reserve and we are preparing for what could come next, whether it be a hurricane, whether it be a disease. I mean, we are challenged to make sure that at a moment when we have a current catastrophe and we have to be vigilant about other catastrophes, that we do not lose focus and spend time dwelling on the past. I promise you we will go back and review the lessons that we have to learn, what went right and what went wrong. But I will tell you now, we will be making a huge mistake if we spend the time in the immediate future looking back instead of dealing with, as you point out, what's going on now and what may yet come.
Mr. Secretary, as always, we thank you for joining us and sharing your views.
And that was Michael Chertoff speaking about the disaster and some of the things that he says he was doing or was going to do. And I think it's very telling that the host there, and his name for the I tend to forget names of people I really don't like that much. So the host there was talking about how the federal government even had models of this exactly, this scenario exactly happening. So for any Republican or for any conservative to come out and say that they didn't know or that nobody anticipated this kind of disaster is completely off the mark. Completely. Well, it's a lie. It's a blasphemous lie. It's a lie that would be built on death. And who knows how many thousands of those people have died because the federal government felt it was more important to create battle plans than an escape route for New Orleans. We're going to go to another clip here, and this other clip, and this one is especially powerful. This was also off of the same show this morning, Meet the Press. And the press, again, I'm really having a tough time with remembering this gentleman's name. Tim Russert, yes. Thank you very much. Tim Russert. He interviewed a gentleman by the name of Broussard, who is the apparently the president of one of the parishes, I think Jefferson Parish, which is, I would suppose that in some places that would be the chairman of the county commissioner or the county board of aldermen or whatever. The parish, Jefferson Parish, which is directly, which is the only way out of New Orleans goes into Jefferson Parish from Orleans Parish. But here is that interview, and I think this is a very telling interview. And let's go ahead and play that one.
President Broussard, let me start with you. You just heard the Director of Homeland Security's explanation of what has happened this last week. What is your reaction?
We have been abandoned by our own country. Hurricane Katrina will go down in history as one of the worst storms ever to hit an American coast. But the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina will go down as one of the worst abandonments of Americans on American soil ever in U.S. history. I am personally asking our bipartisan congressional delegation here in Louisiana to immediately begin congressional hearings to find out just what happened here. Why did it happen? Who needs to be fired? And believe me, they need to be fired right away, because we still have weeks to go in this tragedy. We have months to go. We have years to go. And whoever's at the top of this totem pole, that totem pole needs to be chainsawed off, and we've got to start with some new leadership. It's not just Katrina that caused all these deaths in New Orleans here. Bureaucracy has committed murder here in the greater New Orleans area, and bureaucracy has to stand trial before Congress now. It's so obvious. FEMA needs more congressional funding. It needs more presidential support. It needs to be a cabinet-level director. It needs to be an independent agency that will be able to fulfill its mission to work in partnership with state and local governments around America. FEMA needs to be empowered to do the things that was created to do. It needs to come somewhere like New Orleans with all of its force immediately, without red tape, without bureaucracy, act immediately with common sense and leadership, and save lives. Forget about the property. We can rebuild the property. It's got to be able to come in and save lives. We need strong leadership at the top of America right now in order to accomplish this and to reconstructing FEMA.
Mr. Brissette, let me ask, hold on, sir. Shouldn't the mayor of New Orleans and the governor of New Orleans bear some responsibility? Couldn't they have been much more forceful, much more effective, and much more organized in evacuating the area?
Sir, they were told, like me, every single day, the cavalry's coming. On a federal level, the cavalry's coming. The cavalry's coming. The cavalry's coming. I have just begun to hear the hoofs of the cavalry. The cavalry's still not here yet, but I've begun to hear the hoofs, and we're almost a week out. Let me give you just three quick examples. We had Walmart deliver three trucks of water, trailer trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need them. This was a week ago. FEMA, we had 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel on a Coast Guard vessel docked in my parish. The Coast Guard said, come get the fuel right away. When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, don't give you the fuel. Yesterday, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines. They cut them without notice. Our sheriff, Harry Lee, goes back in, he reconnects the line, he posts armed guards on our line and says no one's getting near these lines. Sheriff Harry Lee said that if American government would have responded like Walmart has responded, we wouldn't be in this crisis. But I want to thank Governor Blanco for all she's done and all her leadership. She sent in the National Guard. I just repaired a breach on my side of the 17th Street Canal that the Secretary didn't foresee, a 300-foot breach. I just completed it yesterday with convoys of National Guard and local parish workers and levee board people. It took us 2.5 days working 24/7. I just closed it. I'm telling you, most importantly, I want to thank my public employees that have worked 24/7, that burn out, the doctors, the nurses. And I want to give you one last story, and I'll shut up and let you tell me whatever you want to tell me. The guy who runs this building I'm in, emergency management, he's responsible for everything. His mother was trapped in St. Bernard Nursing Home, and every day she called him and said, are you coming, son? Is somebody coming? And she said, yeah, Mama, somebody's coming to get you. Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday. And she drowned Friday night. She drowned Friday night.
Mr. President.
Nobody's coming to get us. Nobody's coming to get us. The Secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences. I'm sick of the press conferences. For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
Just take a pause, Mr. President. While you gather yourself in your very emotional times, I understand. Let me go to Governor Haley Barbour of Mississippi. Governor Barbour, can you bring our...
Let's not go to Governor Barbour. I don't much like Governor Barbour. Governor Barbour's one of them there neocons. We don't much care about Mr. Barbour. But I do want to say something about the gentleman that just spoke. This was this morning. This was this morning that they were talking about not having people come for them and come after them and come help them. And it's just appalling, ladies and gentlemen. It is just appalling. This drama that we are experiencing right now is unfolding and is continuing as we speak. And at this point, I'm there's something that I think I'd like to do because I think it's very appropriate. And so we're going to close the show off here in just a moment. But before we do that, we're going to play a song, because I think that we all need a little bit of a distraction at this point. This is Muddy Waters with Stormy Monday. Thank you.
turn her back to me.
And that was Muddy Waters playing Stormy Monday Blues. And, I that was a very stormy Monday in New Orleans. And, you know, I just wanted to express at this point that I am very grateful for what I have in my life today. I'm very grateful to have the people in my life that I have in my life today. And I would love for everyone who is listening to this program to reach around you, you know, over the next few days and help out your fellow man. If you're in a city where some of some of our citizens have come to repair their lives, do everything that you possibly can to help those people in their lives and help make them better. Because that's what it's about. That's the American spirit. The American spirit is not greed and corruption. The American spirit is not bureaucratic bullshit. The American spirit is about helping one another. The American spirit is about carrying a message of hope to people who don't have it. We have witnessed the actions of our government over the last few days be completely horrible and deplorable and disrespectful. We private citizens can and will do better. You've been listening to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. We're very glad that you could join us for this evening's show, this special edition of All Things Reconsidered, was recorded on Sunday evening, September the 4th, 2005. For more information or to find out more about All Things Reconsidered, please visit www.thetruthis.us. And as always, we'd love to hear your comments or see your email. Thank you again for joining us. Have a great week.